Welcome to the Convene podcast. My name is Magdalena Tanasova, digital media editor of Convene and your host. Welcome to season two, recorded at Convening Leaders 2024 in San Diego and dedicated to PCMA's 20 in their 20s program. In this episode, together with Alan Mallory from the Society of Maternal-Fetal Medicine and Matthew Johnson from Medscape, we're talking about how to design for digital and all the things that digital may mean, especially in the context of medical meetings. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Convene podcast. It's my pleasure to have you both here, and thank you for accepting the invitation. And let's start with some brief introductions. Just tell us a bit about yourself and how many years you've been in the industry. Anything else interesting you want to share?
You want to go first?
Sure. Well, I'm Matthew Johnson. I have been in the industry now for about 6 years, and I work for Medscape, a medical education company, with WebMD. I've got a background in multiple different types of events, a lot of symposiums, conferences, citywide, trade shows. A lot of those have taken on both in person and digitally, or hybrid, of course.
All right. I'm Alana Mallory, and I am part of the 2015 class of 20 in their 20s. Time flies. And I've been in the industry now for 16 years. So something interesting is I actually got my introduction to the events industry by weddings. So I am a wedding planner as well. And shortly after graduating from undergrad, I decided to see if I could round myself out in the corporate events industry. So I've worked with nonprofits and largely associations and some government agencies as well on meetings and events. So it's great to be here.
Can you share a bit about your approaches in designing for digital when it comes to virtual and also in-person events? And Lana, let's start with you.
Sure. I would say that pre-pandemic, we really weren't doing many virtual events in a lot of spaces. A lot of people thought that, oh, virtual means webinar. And it's like, virtual event is not the same thing as a webinar. I think we know that in the meeting planning space very well. But a lot of people didn't. And I would say to answer that question, I like to begin with the end in mind there and kind of work backwards. Because I think that it's important to think about the type of meeting that you're planning or event that you're planning. And obviously, people are going to engage with your content in different ways. So if you have people that are 100% in person, there will be a digital aspect to your event and, you know, how they engage with what you've created. But that'll be different than a 100% virtual audience, which will be 100% reliant on, you know, the digital things that you create. And then if you have a bit of a hybrid experience, you know, what does that mean, right? You're going to have some sessions and events where people are in person and virtual, some that are all virtual and some that are all in person. So for me, I try to think about what type of event are we planning and then kind of work backwards for how I want people to engage with the materials. So that's kind of my approach. What about you?
Yeah, I think the same. I think something I realize is that a lot of people, regardless of how they're going to attend, even the in-person audience now also wants a digital component. So sometimes we think we might be able to get away without a digital component for some of these smaller meetings, but really, when people come in person, they still want to maybe catch up with friends they haven't seen in years or you know, colleagues they haven't seen in years because of, you know, what all that we've just been through. And so they might want to watch a session together outside of a session room. And I think when we design for digital, especially in this return to in person, we really need to make sure we're considering the in-person digital experience as well as the person at home.
Do you have any example that comes to mind where having this digital asset, whichever digital ask you have in mind, really contributed to the experience of the delegates?
I had an experience last year where a client of mine at the time, they are a academic association. They were planning a conference for about 300 people, so not a huge event, but also not very small either, and one of the largest ones for that association. And they didn't have a lot of money, and we know that no matter what you want to do, it costs, right? One of the things that we did was they couldn't afford to have a mobile app, you know, at that meeting. But it was like, how are we going to you know, reduce printing costs so we can be more green and sustainable, but how can we also give the people the materials that they need? So one of the creative solutions that we came up with was just to do like a Google Drive where we just had different folders set up for agenda, shuttle schedule, things like that. And we communicated to the attendees in the Know Before You Go, there will be very limited materials that are printed, you know, on site. So we tried to manage expectations from the outset. And we had on our signage QR codes to that Google Drive. And I think we all know that as we do events, things change and things happen. So one great thing about that was as we had changes or presenters couldn't come or attendee lists changed, we could just update them, save it to the Google Drive, and it updated for everyone across the board. So I think with that one, it was particularly helpful because people were able to get the information, access the information, but we were able to work within their budget to get it done.
I love that. Sometimes it's like DIY, but it works.
It works.
That's right. I think that's something we, as we keep progressing and learn more about what the audience's appetite is for digital, keeping the experience in mind doesn't always have to be the experiences we were providing. So if there's pared down ways to do that on budget, especially because we know that digital events can be extremely expensive, especially if we're going to do in-person and digital. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about ways that we can pare down those costs and still provide an experience that might not be the experiences we were providing, but one that still works and meets the goals and requirements of the meeting and gets a learner or an attendee what they need. I think something definitely to keep in mind as we continue to evaluate where we're at.
What do you see for future events from now on, like 24, 25? Are there hybrid meaning having a digital element? So do you still see that, or are your clients and organizations moving towards completely in person with very limited digital experience?
I think a lot of the industry was shocked. I know I was within a few years of kind of returning to normal, that people weren't doing hybrid, because I think we all thought hybrid was going to be the new norm, and it was going to be everybody was going to have to do that. And I think what we're seeing is different industries evaluating their ability financially to do that, their own audience's appetite for that, whether or not they want to be in person or not. Something we're seeing is that was that attendees that are in person still want that digital component offered to them, but we also do have a large virtual audience too when we do hybrid. So it's kind of like a balancing act. I think every industry is going to be a little bit different. That's not really what we expected, but I think every industry is going to be a little bit different, and it's just going to be a balancing act for planners to figure out what can we do to provide the experience that our audience wants.
I would agree with that, and I think that while the pandemic was terrible, there are some, you know, we'll all be dealing with the rippling effects of the pandemic for generations to come. But I do think, especially from like an access perspective, I do think that it increased a lot of accessibility for a lot of people in a lot of areas. And so I do think that I've seen when, you know, we try to have an all in-person event, you still get that question, will there be a digital component or a virtual component? Is it going to be hybrid? So I think that that is kind of here to stay. But I agree with Matthew in that how we implement that, you know, kind of changes. And I think that one thing I learned from going, you know, 100% virtual for a couple of years and now coming out of that and doing a combination is whenever you're planning an event that has a virtual or hybrid component, you're really planning two separate events, because you're thinking of your in-person attendee experience, and then you're also thinking of your virtual attendee experience. And while, yeah, there might be some hybrid sessions where you have virtual attendees there, the way that they're engaging with the content is going to be completely different. I still see sometimes virtual events where there's not a lot of breaks built in, or people are just like, we can just make everything also virtual. And it's like, I think sometimes you, as planners, we are going to have to have those difficult conversations maybe with our stakeholders and maybe present that, okay, is there a way to still do this virtually, but maybe make it more, I guess, comfortable and realistic for a virtual audience, you know? And how are ways that we can accomplish both goals while keeping both groups in mind?
And to kind of play off that, I think one thing we're doing and I've seen done is understanding that the audience isn't engaged live with us all the time, but maybe they're signing up to be part of the virtual audience so they get those assets, the digital content after in an on-demand format. And so I think really exploring like what is the value to the attendee to be with us virtually live as the meeting's happening in person, or do they just want the content? So what does the audience want? I think a great way to cut costs and kind of make it make sense sometimes is to maybe do a virtual meeting later, or, you know, have all this pre-recorded in the can content from the in-person meeting, but just host it later in a different type of format. So I think we're still exploring some of these ways, that we can provide this experience to our attendees. But I think also keeping in mind, I'm not sure, our audience might not always understand what it takes to put on a virtual event, right? Some people might think it's just putting a camera in a room, and they might, you know, challenge us and why is it so difficult. Or even some stakeholders might think that. Less so now, maybe, since we've done it so long. But I think just making sure we have patience and understanding the other perspective of when we do get pushback on how we're providing a virtual experience and why we're making decisions we are, we have patience with that other perspective and understand that as planners, we know what all goes into it, but not everyone does.
And it seems, at least during the pandemic, it was kind of a personal experience for the audience, because we as event planners had a component entering into their homes.
Mm.
Then some of the virtual elements became much more entertainment than knowledge sharing, because, right, to keep them engaged, you had to become the TV in the house all of a sudden. Yeah. So, of course, for medical, it's very difficult to be just entertaining and not speak about the topic. So that's, I'm sure, a challenge you're still facing on how to balance.
I love how you said that, too, because I think that it's very different when your audience is 100% in one format or 100% in another. When our worlds were all turned upside down at the same time, not that everybody was impacted in the same ways, but all of our worlds were disrupted, right? And then it's just like everybody locked down, virtual, that's where we're going to be. And I know myself, it's like kicking that can down the road. 2 weeks. Okay, we'll reevaluate in a month. 3 months. 2 years, 3 years, you know? And so we all were used to operating in the world and navigating the world one way. And then it's everybody thrown into virtual. So I think at the beginning, there was a lot of new, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of grace there, right? Because people were doing virtual events that they had never even attended or experienced before. So I think people were just kind of feeling it out. And then we got used to that. And then it's like, now that we're coming out of the, you know, pandemic, it's too like, okay, well, I remember how things used to be pre-pandemic. And I remember how I was engaging with things in the pandemic. I think everybody is just trying to find the common ground. But something I really like that you said, Matthew, was like thinking about from the attendees to kind of put them at the forefront of those conversations and just think, what kind of experiences are we trying to create for them? Because I've seen that too, where sometimes it does make more sense and it kind of appeases stakeholders too that might not understand. If you say it's going to be 100% in person, we're going to record everything and then we're going to package the content and make it available later. Maybe not everything, but, you know, certain things. And I think that with one thing that's nice about the virtual component is you can't, I'm still trying to figure out how to, like clone myself and make myself be able to appear multiple places at once. I think that's every planner's wish, right? And one thing that virtual has allowed us to do is you can physically be in one session, but maybe later you can go back and watch a concurrent that you missed. And so I think that there are, sometimes you kind of have to wade through what the attendees are saying and get to the root of it and see if, okay, we're never going to make everybody happy 100% of the time. But is there a way that we can try to find common ground, again, keeping those costs in mind? Because those are very real, too.
It's true, very true. And I think something we did, I mean, during the pandemic, when it was a shared experience and everyone, like you said, 100% was virtual, is we set an expectation, right? As planners, we were striving to innovate and make sure that we had a great product to deliver, knowing that we had to go fully virtual. And so we did that. I think there's been a lot of great things, and virtual and digital events have come a long way because they did exist before the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. But I think we propelled them forward in a way that set a new expectation. And now we're struggling as an industry to meet that expectation because of all the other costs and having to do the in-person. But the ones, the attendees that want to attend virtually still have those same expectations. So it's really challenging to reach both of those in a way that makes everybody happy and our budget's happy, stakeholders happy.
So. I love that. Make the budget happy.
Make the budget happy.
And how about personalization? Do you feel now with all the tools that we have that you can do more for the audiences and help your clients or events, you know, be a bit more personalized?
I think that's a That's a challenging one. When I think about personalization, I think of it from the aspect of, again, like Matthew said, like thinking about your attendees and maybe kind of tailoring experiences, maybe not necessarily to the specific individual, but to your audience. I think we rely a lot on attendee feedback too, to let us know what they want, because I think from a planner's perspective, we're so close to our work and we care so much about what we do that the attendees might not realize that this one little thing that they barely even notice on the digital platform or on site was something that we agonized for weeks over, right. You know, and it's just like, oh, they're going to love that. And then the attendees get there and they might not even comment on it. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's something where I really think that attendee feedback is helpful to let us know what they want to see and to help us like check the box, like these things that we're putting our time and energy into, are they actually what the people want? So yeah, what would you say to that, Matthew?
Yeah, no, I definitely 100% agree with you. I think like when I think about AI and how it's going to help, I mean, we could talk hours on that, of course, but I think as far as aggregating more enormous amounts of data from feedback and what we're asking in registration and being able to analyze that and personalize, I think AI is going to help a lot with that. I don't know how yet. But I do think like there's going to be a way for us to really make everyone's experience feel really personalized and individual to them as a part of a group or as a specific individual too. Depending on the size of the meeting, can be really difficult. You know, we're talking about smaller meetings, it can be a little bit easier, but these large meetings, PCMA, the greater ones, the citywides, I think there's going to be a way to do that with the help of a machine. We just got to get there.
You mentioned AI. What about AR and VR? Do you believe the use of these technologies can enhance also the participants' experience on site? Or maybe not even on site, but online?
So I've used AR before in an event. When I worked for a tractor trailer manufacturer and we did some trade shows and marketing events. Attendees would view the side of a trailer with these glasses on and see all different information and videos and things. And it was really cool. This was early. This was 2019, so the technology's come a long way, and I haven't really dabbled with it since. But I'm really intrigued by what it can do, what it can provide people, and how we can incorporate it too at people's homes. I'm not sure what that looks like, but I'm definitely interested. I think it's a really great technology. It's going to definitely make a presence in person more and more often. I'm not sure how it'll affect digital events yet.
That's not something that I have experience with at my events, but that sounds really cool. I would say the only experience that I have is I think that stuff exists definitely in like the expo hall, right? A lot of our, especially for medical meetings, it's cutting edge technology all the time, and medicine science is always advancing, and it's amazing what, you know, they can do, what the machines can do, what these, you know, what computers can do. It's not something that I've incorporated into my planning, but I think that would be cool. I think we as planners too, it's up to us that like, sometimes I see really cool things. I'm like, will my audience go for that? You know what I mean? But then I think it's up to us too, to keep our audience in mind, but also expose them. Cause I think people also don't know what they don't know. So I like that idea. And that is something that I don't know how to work that in, but I'm going to keep that in my mind. And like I said, AI is coming, it's here. So might as well get on board with it. Right.
Something interesting I learned at the Next Gen workshop, our speaker made a comment about innovation, and he said, for the meetings industry, we're still very traditional, right? You walk in a room, and once the door shuts, he said, you're not sure what decade you're in anymore. And what right? And we laugh at what he's saying, right, is that the session room and the delivery of content hasn't evolved much, you know, in the history of events. And I'm sure, obviously, it has. Stage sets have evolved, and some things have changed, but the way we deliver content hasn't. And so I think for our generation, and especially thinking about 20 in their 20s, just thinking about how can we incorporate AR, VR, AI, and all these different things. Like, what can we do to really turn upside down the way we provide and deliver content in a traditional session setting? So I think there's, especially for our generation coming up, there's a way that we can deliver content that's going to be digested differently than the way it traditionally has been. And that's speaking in person. I know we're talking about digital events here, but same, I think same thing, you know, same thing applies. Is
definitely,
we need to be thinking about how we can deliver content differently with these technologies emerging.
And I think that too, especially, is going to become, well, increasingly important for in-person, but as well as digital, because I think we've seen too, like engagement was probably very high for virtual events at the beginning. because it was exciting. It was new. It's all we had. And then I think, you know, we all heard that Zoom fatigue, right? And while I've already said that virtual events are not the same thing as Zoom or webinars, I still think that kind of applies, where you're just like, okay, virtual event, it's on in the background while I'm working or doing something else. And so ways to bring people back and make them, you know, refocus and like excite them and energize them too around the content, I think it's going to be a big thing. So I'm really excited to see where it goes. I think we as planners, if we incorporate that in the medical space, and I'm sure any other industry, there's lots of competition for meetings and events. And they're deciding between your event and a competitor's event. Yeah. A way that makes sure stand out is going to make them come to yours. So I think as we get access to these technologies and we have them at our disposal, like, we should try to learn them and see how we can, you know, slowly bring the temperature up and engage people and show it to them. Because I think it will. It's here to stay. That's for sure. So absolutely, it's exciting.
Do you incorporate technology to just open up your events to be more accessible to different audiences that, you know, in the past they just could not attend or get the content?
That's something where I think that I would like to see more examples or more improvement in. I know in a place I worked before, we were really great. We actually hired an accessibility coordinator that was an expert in that space in terms of different, you know, mediums and different ways to provide content on site for in person. We had, like, you know, fidget spinners for people. We had a quiet room, you know, for people that needed that time to get back to themselves. We asked at registration if there were any requests that they had, and we would get, you know, ASL interpretation even for those sessions for those people. And so I think that there was a lot that we had started to do right before the pandemic for in person. And for digital, we always ask the question what people need. And I feel like the way that I've been handling it is kind of when the request comes, then, you know, we try to make the accommodation then. That has resulted in, you know, ASL interpretation for a digital event. We asked them to tell us what sessions they wanted to go to, and we did pair them with an ASL interpreter that was able to do, you know, live interpretation for them. But I feel like beyond that example, I don't really know if I have broached that too much in the digital space, but it's definitely, I would like to, because we want everybody to be able to come to our events and feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, in the digital space, it might be a little tougher. I think it starts with defining what all those accessibility needs are, because I think, as individual planners, we might not know everything that's out there that needs. So I think it's great that you guys hired an accessibility coordinator. It's really awesome. I haven't heard of that, but I think that's really helpful. But I think just, you know, there's common things that we can do, and then some of the more detailed things would be researching and striving to understand. But definitely things like, I mean, closed captions, ASL, like you mentioned, even in the digital space, other languages, because I think a lot of times, especially for associations, when we're having lots of foreign representation at our meetings or international representation at our meetings, we deliver content in English, which may be someone's second language, but if we have the opportunity to deliver it in their primary language and they can understand it even in a stronger way, why aren't we taking hold of that? And it's hard to do that in person, but when you have the digital space, you know, translating via closed captions, not that difficult. So think about the ways that we can enhance experiences for anyone with accessibility needs. And, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive, it doesn't have to be complex, it can be these simple things. And sometimes it will be more complex, but we have to be, you know, accommodating to that as planners, especially as we understand more and more what individuals need and seek.
And I think I agree with what you said. And I know one thing that we do is, like, the slide decks that we put out for people to use, we try to be mindful of the colors. You know what I mean? So, you know, maybe a darker background is easier for people who have visual, you know, impairment issues, easier for them to read and things like that. So, but I love what you said too about, we don't know all that's out there. And so I think that we can start with asking, you know, make sure that we're asking, like, exactly, to give people the opportunity. And sometimes maybe asking is better as, like, an open-ended text box instead of, you know, check boxes that we've predetermined, right? We've predetermined what that language is. And just ask people. It could be an optional question, but just see what they write in there. Because I have found that even in working with that job and that accessibility coordinator, not all people that say that they have, you know, hearing challenges have the same challenges, right?
Exactly.
And so I think it can be intimidating, like, oh my gosh, if we ask the question, are we going to be like overwhelmed with responses and are we not going to be able to, you know, deliver? But what I found is that people just appreciate that you're asking. I do think there's a responsibility. Once you ask, though, you do have to at least communicate to them what you're able to do and
exactly.
just follow up with them, you know, like it might be something that you can't do, but you can try to say, okay, we can't do this, but will this work for you? Or, you know, and I think that for the most part, people are just, they're happy that you're asking. And as long as you're trying to make an accommodation, I think that a lot of people will, you know, meet you halfway with that.
Absolutely. Just try and be a nice human being to others and be open about your own limitations and what you don't know, right? Because we're now at the beginning of the year. So looking ahead, what trends excite you and how are you planning to adapt in the coming year to, it might not be technology and can be anything. There's so many things happening in the world right now.
There are. So the AI, I've been more excited about it and listening to the sessions that have been presented because I think, I'll speak for myself, like things are intimidating that you don't understand for me, you know? So it's like, oh, AI, that sounds really cool. But it's like, okay, but how are we going to use it? And how are we going to implement it? And just even some of the takeaways from yesterday's opening session were really helpful. And I'm going to go home and ask ChatGPT, like how event planners can, you know, use it to like what things we should be thinking about for AI. I was like, okay, I'm going to ask it that, you know, and see what it says. But I know that I'm really excited. I think that technology is constantly advancing and it's a way that we can connect with people, you know, constantly. People might not be able to, you know, pay to, it's expensive sometimes to come to events, but you can always connect with somebody using technology. So I'm really excited to see how, as technology adapts, the technology that we use is gonna play well in the sandbox with other technologies. You know, I've been really impressed with the app that we've had for convening leaders and how you can see the live transcriptions from AI, like directly from in the app. You don't have to go somewhere else, you know what I mean? And you can view for the sessions that are live streaming right there in the session and can go back and watch it later. So, you know, I'm always a fan of platforms, you can update things in one place and it updates it everywhere, you know? So I'm just curious to see as technology evolves, like what other features are going to be available for all of us to tap into in those same places. So,
yeah, I think just piggybacking off of that, I'm really excited. I think AI is going to do a lot for this industry, a lot for our world, of course. But I think about like what a privilege it is that we get to be part of, you know, the founding generation that gets to, not that we founded it, but like, you know, we get to be part of the generation that gets to, you know, help define how it's used. We get to help define the ethics behind it. We get to help define where we can use it and how attendees can experience it and how it can help our planning. And we get to be a part of that. And I think that's exciting. And I think even beyond that, I was, you know, playing around with the, I think it's called Spark from PCMA. And, you know, they were telling us that it's going to get smarter as we use it more. Like we're contributing to it. And I think that's just a really great way that, you know, all of these planners here, suppliers, everyone in the industry is going to get to use this AI platform, kind of contribute knowledge to it. And so when we're asking it questions, I'm sure it's a computer answering us back, but it's answering us back with, you know, just a wealth of knowledge from all of these great things that everyone else is doing. And I think that's something that, you know, can be challenging to, you know, how do I make this even better? And it's hard to, you know, traditionally we'd have to come here and find out, or we'd have to go call our colleague and be like, what are you guys doing for this? But now we have it at our fingertips and we're all going to be able to contribute to it. Tens of thousands of planners could contribute. And I think it's really exciting to see how that's going to evolve and just get to be a part of all of this. You know, it can be really intimidating, but I think if we look at it optimistically and take charge of it and be a part of that conversation, how we can use it ethically and how we can use it to enhance everything from our jobs, making our lives easier to adding more to the attendee experience. I think it's going to be real exciting for all of us.
I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
It's our collective baby.
It is our collective baby.
We're raising all together.
Yeah, there we go.
And wrapping this conversation, was there anything that we didn't address and we should have?
I think we covered a lot. I think an important thing to note from just thinking about digital events is to really, as an industry, we need to keep measuring what attendee appetite is, like what is our responsibility to deliver digital events? Because people do deserve the right to attend meetings regardless of, you know, how they're able to make it, whether they have to attend virtually for whatever reason or financial reasons. So we have a responsibility to understand what the appetite is and what the need is there. And again, just along with our conversation earlier in this podcast, I think an experience can show itself in many different ways. And so it doesn't have to be the way we've always done it. It can be a pared down version or innovative new way that maybe isn't as costly. So I think as planners, we just need to be aware of our responsibilities and what the industry wants, what the attendees want. And then also think about new ways to deliver that that might be more in line with our strategies and our budgets.
I love that. And I would agree. I would say that another thing that excites me is the fact that there is still the appetite for people to connect in person. And I know that's something that a lot of us wondered about coming out of the pandemics. Like, there are perks to being together in person too. But there is still going to be that appetite for digital connection and digital experiences paired with our in-person experiences. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's just going to be increasingly more important for us to, you know, be forward-thinking, be innovative, to keep a pulse on what our attendees are expecting, and then also to just not be afraid to try new things, have new conversations, and I think we'll all continue learning from each other. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you both so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to another conversation in the future.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. Great to be here.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you would like additional perspectives on the industry, check out pcma.org/convene. Until next time.